15 seasons and a bit, and 16 years now. This is our 16th year, and I really don't think there's been a season like this one. The easiest thing in the world is to criticise, and Twitter's maybe sometimes not the best place for serious analytical debate about stuff. So whenever I'm trying to understand a viewpoint, position or opinion or decision making process of someone doing something that I wouldn't have done, I try to put myself in their shoes. I try to assess the way that they've made decisions in the past, the way they've looked at things in the past, and think, right, okay, if that's the way their brain works, let me try and rationalise the way that that is and put myself in that position. And so I try to do that on this podcast, to get some rationale behind why after just 7 wins out of the last 22 games, we still have the same management and coaching team taking the team as I pull this together on a Friday night. So I have St Anthony and Sean along. They discuss things as well. We discuss the Libby game. We discuss things in general. We discuss the press conference. Try to talk about some of the things we've been talking about in this podcast now for 10 years. We talk ad nauseum on this podcast about the structure of the club and how I believe there should be a director of football and coaching staff and blah, 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 blah. Talked ad nauseum on this podcast about the role of the directors, the non-executive directors, and Anthony touches on that, that you'd heard on some other podcast, and we expand on what we've talked about ad nauseum in this podcast for years. I've joked for years about being the only person in the room who votes against Tom Allison as a senior non-executive director and things like that. So really, if you've been listening for 7, 8, 9, 10 of the last 15, 16 seasons we've been doing this, then some of this will be topics we've covered over and over and over again. But we do it in the context of where we are just now, really in the context of the changes that we haven't made might have brought us to where we are just now. Anyway, enough of me and my ramblings. This is St Anthony with Sean. Right, so I am joined now by St Anthony and Sean. How you doing? How you doing, boys?
Not too well.
How do you think I'm doing, Harry? How do you think I'm doing? I know you read. Yes, you know, I'm doing terrible. You know, you got to stay chipper. Bugger off. Yeah. Is it, you know, I was watching a program about the dinosaurs a few weeks back, right? And I was watching this, and basically all the wee ones were getting eaten by the big ones. And I was like, this wee one wakes up every morning and his only goal is to not get eaten. Yeah, that's how I feel right now. I never thought I'd be closer to that mentality than I am right now. You know, how's it going? Oh, another day, you know, they end up on a ventilator. Yeah, brilliant, magic. You know, and you know, I'm not even sure if football's real anymore. Are we watching holograms? Are we watching some sort of enhanced software? You know, I don't know anything anymore.
I used to, if I was trying to go to sleep at night and I was thinking too much about work, I used to then just try and think about football and about Celtic, you know, just to try and get your mind to think about something irrelevant to work. But you can't even do that now.
Jesus Christ. That's what's keeping
you up. You know, you're making a good point there, Harry, because sometimes when I'm lying in bed at night, it goes through my head that what team would you pick at the weekend? You know, it goes through your head, but would it be Barkas, would it be Bain, would it be Hazard, and you work your way forward for there. And you know, I'm exasperated because there are so many things that are wrong with the team and so many poor players. In fact, maybe that's not true, actually, but maybe the players aren't poor. Maybe they just need a change of scenery in terms of coaching and management. But the point I'm making is that when I get through the team and I pick the 11 I would pick, I think once this season, Neil Lennon has picked that 11. Now, I'm not saying I'm a genius or anything like that, but I think it goes to show how much out of kilter the fans' selection and Neil Lennon's selection has been this season, because it's almost like, dare I say it, it's almost like pulling names out of a hat.
Do you know, you're talking there about being miserable, and Sean, you were talking about the, you know, stuck in the house and all that type of stuff. Actually, and this is, and it was just when you there said about players being crap. Maybe they're not crap, right? And this is my continual point. I don't think the players are crap. And again, and this is not coming up with excuses. This is, I think, like in anything in life, there is not a simple black and white, this is the reason why this season has been so crap thing. Mm-hmm. There will be 101 reasons. Some of which will hardly contribute in some ways. But I was having a conversation with someone this week that made me think about Frimpong not being any good this season, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the guy said, I was talking about it, he said, oh, I've got a 20-year-old son who's at university and he's just permanently miserable. He's in the house, can he go out and see his pals? Can he go out and do the student things that you do at university? He's just in the rut of, he gets up, he does his online lessons, and then it's finished, and all he can do is watch the telly or play his Xbox or maybe go for a walk around the block.
Mm-hmm.
And I then thought, I thought your son's the same age as Frimpong.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll be miserable.
Yep.
Because all he's getting to do is, and okay, people might say he's miserable. He's playing football every week. Well, that guy's son's going is a student, and you know, doesn't have the responsibilities of a mortgage and electricity bills and heating bills and all that type of stuff. And it's the same.
It's the best time of your life.
Yeah, so it's the same principle of he'll be miserable. Barkas, right? And again, it then got me thinking about things like Barkas, who can't be crap. He's played Champions League football and he's played football for Greece, right? But he has flown across to the UK and then just been stuck in quarantine and isolation.
Mm-hmm.
Can he go to a Greek restaurant to feel at home? Can he do what players, you know, elite players can now do, which is hire a private jet and jump home for 2 days, say to the boss, I'm feeling a bit homesick, and get an extra day off to fly home, fly his family over? Can he do any of that?
Mm-hmm.
And he's in a foreign country with a different culture, always going about one of the I can never remember which one it was, that played for Rangers, talking about he lived in Northern Europe, played football in Northern Europe, meal times Northern Europe, meal times bedtime Northern Europe, meal times, flew to, and then signed for Barcelona, goes to Spain, and immediately has his main meal 3 hours later at night, going to bed 2 hours later at night, for your whole body clock. And people expect you to perform as an elite athlete the next day with no difference. And then he gets a phone call and he goes to Rangers, back to Northern Europe, back to the Northern Europe timescale. And I know people might listen to this going, aye, but they earn a fortune. Yeah, but no matter how much you earn, you're still hungry. You can still get tired. You can still have your body clock buggered about. And I'm not saying that's all the reason, but we had a lot of players signed for us in the summer. And the one who settled best has been Turnbull, and which is the one that was Scottish and signed from Scotland, who has had the least disruption to his life compared to everybody else. It's Turnbull. And I do wonder, because I don't believe these players are crap, I do wonder if that is part of the problem. Mm-hmm.
Well, do you ever read the book? It was Soccernomics, isn't it?
Yes.
Simon Cooper. And there was an entire chapter dedicated to the relocation of footballers and the infamous story of Didier Drogba. Basically, I think he spent, what, a year in a local hotel near the training ground? Something like that, you know, something to that effect. And your point is very pertinent, Harry, in the sense that, you know, Barkas, as far as I'm led to believe, English definitely isn't his first language.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's an immediate deficit. And like you're saying, normally that sort of integration, he might meet up with the Greek community in Glasgow or, you know, the west of Scotland or whatever the case may be. There might be, you know, he can't go out with even friends, other teammates and hook up and socialise that way and integrate himself that way. I think the El Hamid article as well. Mm-hmm. About.
She's just getting back to the divorce there.
Yeah.
Just to let you know, one's called Ronald, the one's called Frank.
Oh, I know, but I couldn't tell you which.
Oh,
I know that, but I still couldn't tell you which. I've no interest in them, so I couldn't tell you which one played for Rangers. I didn't like either of them before one of them signed for Rangers. But yeah, and you know, simple things like, and see, Dewey, when he signed, you know, the Chinese guy, he was only with us for a very short period of time. Mm-hmm. The interpreter stayed in the same flat as him. I imagine with COVID rules, they're not allowed to have an interpreter living cheap a jowl like that. You know, in terms of you saying about Barkas, apparently Sorrow doesn't speak English. I mean, I know we signed him a year ago, but he's lived the bulk of, you know, apart from 2 months, he's lived the bulk of that time in the pandemic. And you say El Hamid's family's back in Israel.
No wonder the boys are miserable, you know.
No, but I do, and people might say, ah, but we're not the only club with that. And I'm not saying that we're the only club, but if you think about it, we signed more players in the summer than Rangers did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We brought more players in, so we've got more players who are likely to be unsettled. You know, we've brought in Barkas, Duffy, and okay, but he's still coming from one end of the country to, you know, coming from Brighton mm-hmm. up to Scotland. Duffy, Barkas, Laxalt,
Ayeti.
I'm losing track now of the signings because we're about five or six. But yeah. the point being, it's for me again, it's no coincidence that the players who have least settled into the team mm-hmm. have been all the new signings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's even in Duffy's case. Okay, he might have signed, you know, from, you know, down south. But from what everybody understands, he came up with a bit of personal baggage as well. You know, I think he lost his dad shortly before he signed as well. So, you know, I think a lot of these new signings were carrying a bit of baggage coming into Celtic in that sense. And COVID has just, what's the word, compounded all these different difficulties, yeah. haven't they? You know?
Yeah.
But like you say, Harry, now this is where management earns their corn, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And what is being done to mitigate that? What has been done to mitigate that? What has been done to try and iron out the difficulties that COVID is presenting? The answers to that remain unanswered, I suppose, in that sense.
I think we need to talk about Duffy here because, you know...
Let's talk about Duffy.
Yeah. He came with a decent reputation. He's an international player. He's Ireland's captain. He's played in the English Premiership. You would think that he's exactly what we're looking for. And it's not in my nature, really, to criticise people unduly. Because I always like to look in the positive. If he's got something in his game, that then I would like to talk that up. But I have not seen such a poor defender for Celtic for many, many years as Shane Duffy. His decision-making, his distribution, he's not even, for a big man, he's not even good in the air. He's got a terrible habit of sort of leaning in people to elevate himself. He doesn't seem to be able to jump from a standing position. His tackling's poor. I mean, I don't see anything in him that's redeemable. And I think we're now at the stage that, you know, it might not be, I don't think he'll go back in January now, given the fact that Julian's injured, but I think there's no chance of him staying at the end of the season. In fact, I would be for sending him back at the end of the season. I'm so disappointed.
I'm a regular. I used to go to Ireland games fairly regularly. I was quite defensive of Duffy, you know, for a long time there. He was Ireland's Player of the Year in 2018. You know, and like you're saying, whenever he joined, I was thinking this is exactly what we need. Put Ayer on one side of him, Julian mm-hmm. on the other, and just let him head those big high balls that are coming in out of the way. I think, yeah, like I said, he's coming with a bit of baggage, a bit of personal difficulties, which obviously doesn't help. I wonder, you know, we talked about the emotional intelligence of the management coaching team. The last time I was on, Harry, I wonder how much that has compounded things. Have they just expected Duffy to get on with things? That's, you know, that sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? You've visibly also watched his confidence drain from him every single game. I think it's crippling them, quite frankly.
Is there any sport you've played relatively recently? You know, in the last few years, any sports you play relatively recently? Last 5-10 years.
Again, it resonated in the sense that I played Gaelic football for years, Harry, and I was a confidence player. If I did one thing well in a game, that would feed me for the rest of the game, and then I would build momentum with that. I think it's almost in reverse with that with Shane, you know. But it's with a heavy heart. It's just not working. Every single game he's going into now, he's a liability. And if there was a more ruthless management team in the dugout right now, I suspect he probably would have been cut. He would have been sent back in January, or the end of January, I should say. But right now, I would rather take my chances with Welsh. I think Welsh is like far more assured.
I was about to say that as well about Welsh, because my heart sank. What was the game Welsh played? They played, it was a Hibs game at home.
Yeah.
And I thought he was Celtic's best defender. And I thought that boy has got something. He might not be a long term, answer at centre half, but in the short term, when the defence is playing poorly, he showed enough that night to get a run of games in the team, yeah, and maybe come on in terms of his confidence and develop. And my heart sank when I heard the team in the next game and Duffy was in, because that is not a team being picked in merit. There's too many players getting picked. Ryan Christie's another one that comes into that bracket. He had a good game for... I can't remember the last good game Ryan Christie played that I was impressed with. And yet every week, guys like Duffy and guys like Christie are getting picked regardless. And it's sending the wrong message out. So is the team is not, whatever way he's picking the team, he's not picking it in merit.
Well, that's Lenny in a nutshell, though, isn't it? He's always been like that, you know. He's always like this tried and tested, hasn't he? He's always had his favourites. He's always had his mainstays. And he's never been one for developing talent or nurturing talent, particularly coming through the ranks. And, you know, was I disappointed to see Duffy back in the team? Yes, I was. Was I surprised that Welsh was left out? Unfortunately not.
See, the reason I was asking, I always try and look at football from my own personal experience to try and give me some context and to try and put myself in other people's shoes. The easiest thing in the world is to, you know, I was thinking today, everybody going on Twitter. I mean, obviously, you know, back in August, we did a podcast saying, you know, sack the manager. It's the easiest thing in the world to say sack the manager. The reality is, I was thinking this today, how many people who are saying sack the manager have actually sacked someone in their life?
Well, we had that conversation, right? And I know where you're coming from, because I know what element of business you're in, and it must be a very difficult thing to have to do that in life. I'm very fortunate, and I'm not in those circles, so that would be I've written reports on people at work, but I've never been in a position that anybody's been sacked. But the point I made to you was, Peter Lawwell is handsomely paid, and the reason he's handsomely paid
matter.
Is...
Wait a minute, you could pay me £100 million tomorrow, I would still feel physically sick sacking someone.
But you're correct. Everything you're saying is correct, and I agree with you to the extent that... I would probably feel physically sick in the same thing, because you would do it with a heavy heart. Your conscience would trouble you. But the point would be that Peter Lawwell, it might be difficult for him, but that's why he's paid that amount of money, to make difficult decisions.
I understand that. All I was going to say is, I think it's important sometimes that we take a step back and try and put things in context, put ourselves in other people's shoes, walk it, as they always say, walk a day in somebody else's shoes to then think differently about how we be. And so all I was going to say, in relation to our defence, I now think the problem is, if anybody's ever played a sport, if you play five a-sides and you've missed four penalties in a row, how do you feel standing up taking the fifth penalty? It may only be five a-sides with your mates, but there is a bit of you thinking, I've missed the last four penalties, I'm probably going to miss this. If you play golf and you miss an easy putt of like 2 feet, the next time you go to the next hole and you're standing there, the people, you're going to stand over that thinking, oh my God, I just like, I can't miss this one again. And I think that, personally, I think it's a mental thing. Getting back to your point, Sean, about I think our biggest problem now with our defenders is completely mental. That they have decided that they're in their head now for every set piece. They are thinking of failure at every set piece. We are lining up with failure in our heads.
Part of the problem is you've got Neil Beaton at centre half. He's not a central defender. He can't hit. He's not for a big man. He's not comfortable heading a ball. It's never been his game. He's a very cultured player, and he plays football on the deck. But he's a midfield player, so I get exasperated.
He hasn't played midfield for 4 years.
But that's not the point. He's not an actual defender. You're taking out a square peg and putting him in a round hole.
No, but the point is, he's a centre half because he's been a centre half now for 4 years.
No, but you're missing the point, right?
No, I get your point. I know your point. I'm just saying that the reality is he's been a centre half.
No, the whole point is when you take a guy who's not an actual centre back, who's not experienced in that position, and you try and mould him into something, you shouldn't be surprised. Now, there's one wee thing I want to say before I go on here, because you were talking there about the difficult decisions in sacking people. Now, if you're a bus driver, if there's a bus driver out there and he gets the sack, then my heart goes out to him, because he will struggle to make a living till he can get a job driving in another bus company. If Neil Lennon gets the sack, he's going to walk out the door with at least £1 million payoff. So I don't have any sympathy for Neil Lennon.
Do you know what his mortgage is?
I don't care.
I don't either. But the point I'm making is, do you know what his car loan is?
Well, do you know something? If his mortgage is so high and his car loan is so high, he's living beyond his means then.
No, he's not, because he's earning £1 million a year.
Yeah, but he's on a rolling contract, so he can't look beyond a year. And he's entitled to his year's pay up to pay him off.
Yeah, but that's denying how we all behave in society. Everybody, I rarely meet a person who doesn't live to the maximum of their earnings. Most people do. That's why most footballers go bust. Something like 30% of English Premiership players are bankrupt within 5 years of retiring. Because people live, we all like to think, oh, he earns a fortune. But the reality is, everybody lives to the maximum of their income. You don't need, you could easily be saving £1,000 a month. If you lived like somebody who didn't earn as much as you do and your wife does. But you do. I could save more money a month if I lived like somebody who didn't live like me and didn't, but I don't, because I live based on the income I've got. And everybody does that, and footballers do that. It doesn't matter that they earn £1 million a year. As I say, 30% of footballers of English Premiership footballers are bankrupt within 5 years of retiring.
Harry, do you not raise in a roundabout sort of way? We don't know the half of it in terms of what's going on in the background. You would like to have thought, I mean, I was looking at the stats just before I came on, and it is our worst league run in 2 decades, if I'm not mistaken.
The last 22 games, yeah.
Yeah, Lou McCarrie days again. We've got 7 wins from the last 22 games, which is not good enough for Ross County, who did actually sack their manager. But it's apparently good enough for us. The questions I constantly see on social media and with my pals is, why is this situation being tolerated? Why is this situation being continued? And as I said already, it just raises more questions than answers. There's such a vacuum of, there's no information coming out. Yeah?
Communication's wrong.
And I suppose that's half the problem, isn't it? I mean, we just don't have an idea. Well, what is the dynamic here? What is keeping this situation continuing?
Yeah, and everything I'm saying is not defending.
No.
As somebody who back in August was saying after we lost to Ferencvaros that the manager should get fired for not playing a striker for 78 minutes in a game when sitting on the bench, right? And for somebody who didn't think the appointment in the first place back in May 2019 was the right thing, I'm not now saying he should stay. All I'm desperately trying to do, because it will make your head blow up if you can't do this, I'm desperately trying to put myself in somebody else's shoes and try and understand the rationale as to why we're here. That's all I'm trying to do. And so from the point I was making, saying about, I was being a bit facetious about the money. Yes, I understand your point. He should have the money in the bank and he should be nice and safe and he shouldn't need it. The point I was making is we don't know how other people live. And, you know, other people continually astound me with the level of debt that they are prepared to live every day of their life at, that I wouldn't sleep at night with. But lots of people do. People live differently. And the fact is, nobody's going to walk away from Lennon's salary. He's going to have to be sacked. Because people just don't do that. Because he's never going to work again, and he knows that.
Yeah. Well, when he left the first time, didn't he? He left of his own accord, and his stock was relatively high, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he didn't even get a good position after that, did he?
Bolton.
Eventually.
And he ended up taking Bolton, I suspect, because once you've gone 6-7 months without a job, people forget who you are.
You're completely off the radar, aren't you, Len? You know, but I come back. I was watching the Tottenham documentary, isn't it? The All or Nothing on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And Daniel Levy and Pochettino actually developed a very close friendship. Their partners were friends with each other, mm-hmm. and so on. He still gave the bullet to Pochettino, didn't he? You know.
No, I agree, and I agree with you saying that's why Lowell is paid £1 million. To make those decisions, I'm just using the point that if they are really, really close,
mm-hmm.
it's not an easy thing to do. And, you know, they are more likely, somebody sent me something tonight, of Lennon's win rate is second only to Martin O'Neill's as a Celtic manager.
Over the two periods?
Over the two periods, his win rate second only to Martin O'Neill. His trophy haul, he's the only person to have won a treble as a player and a manager.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know
exactly.
The point
I'm making is I can understand why, if you're really, really close to him, as I think Peter Lowell is, I can understand why you let those stats blind you to the reality of what you're seeing on the pitch.
Yeah, I totally get what you're trying to explain there, and my heart breaks because I love Neil Lennon. I was a great admirer of him as a player, and I think the first time round as manager, he did a wonderful job, and he basically sold your pal Aidan McGeary for a lot of money and built a team around it. And his initial signings at that point were tremendous. I mean, the Lowell made a comment that he has an eye for a player. He did at that time. I don't know how much of that was done to John Park and how much of it was done to Neil Lennon. But the second time around, I mean, Celtic's recruitment in general, even when Brendan was there towards the end, is abysmal. And it's a source of deep concern that we are pissing away money, millions, every season on guys who, when you see them up close, your first reaction is, who signed him? You know, the first time I saw that boy Bio in action, he looked like a player for St Rocks getting a game in the SPL. How I would imagine a player for St Rocks or St Anthony's in the junior leagues would be playing in the SPL. He just was so far off the pace; it was unbelievable. And our good signings since Brendan's first season as manager are very few and far between. And that gives me deep concern because we had what was the guy's name? Nick Congleton?
Nick's Hammond. Congleton. Yeah.
Congleton was the first guy. And now you've got Hammond. And to be honest, Hammond doesn't seem any better than Congleton.
Well, my point on that relates to one of the things that riled me about the announcement of Neil Lennon signing was when we used the term, he's got an eye for a player.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. that's utterly bonkers. That's fine when God, what was Brian Clough's right-hand man called?
Peter Taylor.
When you're Clough and Taylor, right, and you only sign people from England, and Clough's looking after the team, and Peter Taylor goes in the car and watches somebody else's game and then comes back and says, sign that guy, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But when you've got the modern world where you've got 7 billion people to choose from and everybody else has got 7 billion people to choose from, granted some of them are kids, but you get my point. You don't do it on one guy having an eye for a player. And your point saying is, I raised a point with Celtic when John Park was the main guy, saying, what if somebody comes and poaches him? We should have this was 7-8 years ago, we should have a network of scouts in countries who feed in. This isn't a rocket science thing. This is just what other clubs do. And they feed into the head guy, and the head guy then liaises with the manager. We never did that. What happens if John Park goes? Well, we did that. John Park went and conquered, and the next guy's not as good. John Park went and Congerton came in, and Congerton wasn't as good. And I get the criticism of Hammond. My defence of Hammond, who I don't know from Adam, would be because he needs to have a network of scouts. You know, we're a player trading club. Sorry, I was just going to say, we're a player trading club, right? So our whole business model is we buy players, we develop them, we sell them, we make a profit. That helps keep the weight, that helps pay the wages, and also funds the next set of transfers. That's the way clubs of our size operate through Europe. In the last 5 years, we have lost £3.88 million in transfers. Genk, who are half the size of us, have made £53.44 million. That's how shite we are, if you want to put it in numbers, regardless of performance on the pitch. If you want to put it in numbers, that's how shite we are.
Well, there are a couple of points, Harry, if I can just read. First of all, you know, coming back to Brian Clough and Peter Taylor, they did their homework on the guys that they signed, not just in a football sense, but in a personal sense. Again, coming back to that Soccernomics book, they tell the infamous story, or stories, I should say, of whenever they went to a potential signing, they said, right, what is your vice? Is it women? Is it drugs? Is it drink? Whatever. We will help you. But also, you know, feel rest assured that whenever we find somebody cheaper and better than you, you're out the door. Or if we can sell you at a profit, we will do that. So they had their scouts, you know, unofficial and official, I suppose, if you want to put it like that, checking out this guy. Is he going to be suitable on a personal and footballing level? Do we do that? Again, that remains to be seen. And again, from what you're saying, from what I've read, our scouting network is laughable in that sense. Coming back to, we are a player trading club, are we?
Well, no, that's what we are self-declared.
We created ourselves on a playing out level to ourselves, didn't we? Because we bought Dembele for $100,000, then sold him for $20 million. Oh, look at us! We're doing the maths, aren't we clever? But we didn't invest that money in any sort of sustainable infrastructure that would continue that process, did we?
No.
So, you know, I mean, we've pulled back the veneer, haven't we? We pulled back the Wizard of Oz's cloak. And we're the biggest small, you know, I heard somebody else mention on another podcast, we're the biggest small-minded club in the world, aren't we? You know, we like...
The one major...
Operate as a big club? No, we don't. Not in a million years.
The one major concern that I've got for the summer is, if you're going to be realistic here, Edward's going to leave. Ayer will probably want to leave. Ryan Christie will want to leave. Oh, and there's probably maybe one or two others who you may of our better players.
Is their value the same value as it was at the start of the season?
No.
Well, that's another thing that I quite agree with you that's a concern. But my biggest concern is, if you sell these guys and you get a big pot of money, who are we going to spend on? Because do you really trust these guys who are the Congertons and the Nick Hammonds to go out there maybe looking for with their pockets full of £10-20 million to buy new players to replace our biggest talents? That's a huge concern. That worries the life out of me, because see if we don't get it right this summer, Rangers could be ahead of us for about the next 3-4 years.
Again, correct me if I'm wrong. Look, I'm not one of these people that scar their records or anything, but say they get to the Champions League, you know, group stage, In theory, that wipes out their debt, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, things are on an even keel then, aren't we? Mm-hmm. And we're playing catch-up financially because, again, from what I can understand, certainly no expert in that sense. We've blown the savings, haven't we, because of essentially COVID.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, because, I mean, the one thing that somebody in defence of the board would turn around and say is, so those people who say that the board don't invest in the team are wrong, because we've actually invested more money than we've raised in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. And that includes £25 billion for Kieran Tierney, and we've made a £5 million loss. And it doesn't include Turnbull's purchase.
Jesus Christ, that's depressing, isn't it?
That is depressing because...
No, but the only thing I would say, and you know, not necessarily agreeing with this, but if you were defending the board's position against the criticism from the fans, the board would turn around and say, well, we backed the manager so much so that we've actually been net spenders in the transfer market in the last 5 years to try and achieve 10 in a row.
Well, unfortunately, they also appointed the manager,
The one thing that Lennon can't complain at this season is that he wasn't given the tools, because by Scottish standards, a vast amount of money to spend in his transfer market. He also retained his better players, because I remember when we signed Ayeti and I thought, well, that doesn't look good, because that means we've got four strikers now. That means that Edward is going to be punted in the last day of the transfer window. And that never happened. So from that point of view, the board deserve credit for backing the manager. It's the fact that I think Harry touched upon it there. It's not just the one factor, but we could sit here and go through the whole. There's been a wee bit of bad luck there as well. I mean, the COVID thing hasn't helped. We've been through that in detail previously, talking about how Rangers regrouped. It gave them an opportunity to bond as a team and plan for the new season. It had the opposite effect on us, because it affected us. We were on form, and then all of a sudden, the season finished short, and our good form couldn't be carried on. So by the time the season started again in July, early August, we were rusty, or we certainly looked rusty, and we never quite found the balance and the form that we'd showed at the end of the previous season. So there's a whole number of factors, but you can't get away from the fact that Lennon has to take ultimate responsibility, because team selection has been poor this season. The recruitment's been poor, and although he's got scouts or experts in that field who recommend things, at the end of the day, he's a manager, and he's got to take responsibility for that. But even, you know, I was watching it the other night, I just couldn't fathom his substitutes. I actually think that the problem Neil Lennon's got this season, you know how we can use 5 substitutes now? I think that's too many for him. I think he either gets confused or he loses track, and he brings on all these players, and we're left there thinking, what shape has that team got now? It's shapeless. It just falls away to blazes. And the substitutions don't really make any sense. I mean, how Christie stayed in the park the other night is beyond me. And I'm hoping that Ayer was injured, because I thought Ayer was just about our best player. And he took Ayer off, and I couldn't understand that either. Because if Ayer wasn't injured... if Ayer wasn't injured and you're bringing Frimpong on, you take Duffy off because he's having a nightmare, and you put Ayer at centre-back where he should be playing.
I thought Ayer
did it. It takes too long to make these subs as well. You know, there's no shape he does make these substitutions. And he waits too long to make them as well. Was 70 minutes? You could almost set a timer, couldn't you, to it?
Yep.
Every 70 minutes, there you go, right? There's the first couple of subs. Maybe 5 minutes later, another couple, you know? And then, like you're saying, there's no rhyme or reason to the subs that he makes. You know, I come back to that game at Ibrox as well.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up with Duffy up front, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ. You know,
schoolboy tactics.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, I remember we had a text conversation saying at halftime, and I thought our three best players were Ayer, in this order. I thought it was Elianussi, Ayer, and I can't even remember who I thought the third one was at the time. Beaton, that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Elianussi, Ayer, and Beaton. And I thought our one of our poorest players was Christie. He was you wouldn't even know he was playing.
No.
Christie plays the full 90 minutes. Ayer comes off.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the one thing I would say about Turnbull coming off, the one defence I would have of Turnbull coming off, Turnbull looks knackered at every game, round about 70, 75
mm-hmm.
minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So, a bit like, remember Andy Tom always came off after about 70. There was very rarely that Andy Tom played a full 90 minutes. One of the few times he did was when we beat Dundee United in the cup game, that there was two goals in the last 2 minutes. But
the classic one, Rogic can't play 90 minutes.
No, but so in defence, Turnbull does often look like he's blown out of his arse when he comes off. But then you then have to wonder, and I know it's probably more challenging in the current environment because of the difficulty of training, but you do have to wonder how that we're in nearly the end of January and Turnbull still looks like he can't, and still Turnbull can't last 90 minutes when he's 21 years of age. He's a young guy.
Harry, I think in general, I've got worries about that. That's one of my worries about the team as well, is that around the 70-minute mark, they all look knackered.
Yeah.
You know? And unfortunately, Turnbull and a couple of others all look even more knackered than the others. Turnbull's been there a few months. I'd like to think he would have acclimatized. That's one of my worries. How is he being coached? How is he being handled? By this point, you know, fitness training and all the rest of it should have kicked in by now, shouldn't it? You know? And it's not. And he is one of our best players, let's face it. He's making that team tick. Mm-hmm. And it again, it worries me because as soon as he comes off, you know, I started to worry last night. It's very frustrating. And I just, you know, yeah, again, you could set your timer by it as well now, couldn't you?
So let's go through the game last night. So
let's do that.
Yeah, if I go. If I go through the team, so the team was...
I've got a knife to stab my leg at the same time.
Barkas, Ayer, Beaton, Duffy, Taylor, Soro, Christie, McGregor, Turnbull, Griffiths and Elianussi. So, Saint, what did you think of the team?
I wouldn't have a Duffy anywhere near. I think in term, I made the point to you in the WhatsApp thing before it that we're picking a team now in reputation and wages rather than anything else. Now, I was on Twitter today and we were discussing Barkas. And seriously, each game that passes, that guy doesn't make a save of any note and goals go by him. Now, part of me is willing to give him the benefit of the doubt because, as Sean was saying earlier, he's Greek, he's in a foreign country, he's maybe not got his family with him. But honestly, God, I've never seen a goalkeeper like him. I can't recall a save of any note that guy has made since the start of the season. And when we play, he doesn't make any mistakes as such. I don't think he's made any howling blunders. But it's such a frustration.
He doesn't
need
much else either.
He doesn't need much else. Yeah. It's such a frustration that the first attack that Livingston had, they scored, but it seemed that way, with a header. And I know that it wasn't his fault, but there's just a feeling that the goalkeeper is maybe the most important part of the team, because when you get that right, it sorts the defence and sorts everything in front of you, from back to front. And I'm exasperated with that goalkeeper. I don't know what would do with him. I genuinely haven't a clue.
I agree to the large extent. I actually thought the first goal was a bit his fault. I thought a keeper of that standard with that value attached to him could have made a better effort at saving it, quite frankly. He's a big guy, you know. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that far from him. But it was such an easy header as well. And like you say, you're exasperated. I think we all are, Saint, you know. Whenever I saw that ball coming in, I was just going, I was watching it through my fingers. Everybody had a good idea what would happen. Unfortunately, it did happen.
The thing that slightly bugged me watching at the telly was Andy Walker having a go at Beaton. When I see, when you kept watching the replay and seeing this guy was standing next to Ayer, he then runs in and Ayer stands still. So the guy ran off Ayer. Beaton had a gap. Beaton was on his man and stayed on his man. And Andy Walker saying he had no idea what's behind him. Well, because I are supposed to be behind him, and I didn't go with the run. My thing about Barca is, again, as I said earlier, I just keep thinking he can't be crap.
No.
To have had the career he's had. The only thing I would say is, he's not made blunders, you know, massive blunders that you would, you know, throwing the ball in the back of the net stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder if the problem he's got is he's come across to a foreign country, doesn't know. I mean, my mate was telling me, who was the German goalkeeper who unfortunately killed himself, who was at Barcelona?
Inca, wasn't it? Robert Inca?
Yeah, and the biography about him, you know, mate was telling me that basically he plays for Barcelona, they lose a cup game against a lesser team, and he gets the blame for it. And he's in a foreign country, knows nobody, on his own, finds himself in the living room. He's basically switching the light on and off for entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, so I have sympathies for Barkas coming across to a foreign land, to a team that immediately has issues, and the manager goes through him, through Bain, through Hazard, back to him. I have sympathies that's not going to build your confidence to take control of the penalty area as a goalkeeper needs to do. And as you said, Sean, if he's not got a great grasp of English, that makes it more difficult to take control of your penalty area as a goalkeeper should do.
It's also, comparisons are probably unfair and unhealthy, I suppose, but to an extent. But, you know, compare him to, you know, Fraser Forster, okay, who has now developed himself and his persona into quite a dominant one in the box, hasn't he?
Yeah.
You know, I watched him for Southampton against Liverpool, and he played exactly the same way when he was up here. He was dominant, he was agile, he was pulling off save after save, which obviously would have given his defence a lot of confidence as well. So you would have had that knock-on effect. You can also tell he's got a dominant personality. He's not shy about coming out, telling folk to do this, do that, do the other, organise things. Poor Barkas is nowhere near that in terms of, you know, persona and mentality, I suspect. I certainly don't get that impression from
him. He doesn't look 6'5".
I was going to say that as well, because
small 6'5", don't
they? Yeah. Do you remember that the when Fraser Forster came back? I think his second game was at Ibrox at the beginning of last season.
Yeah.
And it showed him on the telly, and I remember it focused on him standing in the goal mouth, and I thought, my God, what a figure of a man that is! He just made that goal look tiny. He filled the goal. And it was so impressive, and I remember thinking that I was a wee bit apprehensive about that game, and I remember thinking at the time, I'm glad he's back, this is good stuff here. And something that I never thought Craig Gordon did, because Craig Gordon being a good goalkeeper, I don't think he had the stature that Forster had. And I look at Barkas and I am shocked that he's 6'5", because it doesn't appear to me when he plays games and his style of play as a goalkeeper that he is 6'5". Now, his distribution's okay, he throws a ball out, he kicks a ball out, not got a problem in that respect. But each game that passes, I keep saying to my son when we're watching the games, that's another game he's not made a save. Literally has not made a save.
I wonder, see if he got, you know, one really good save under his belt.
Would
that feed his confidence, you know, would that help?
That could be a turning point.
Knock things on, in a lot of different ways. But again, you know, He hasn't, you know, let's deal with the reality. He hasn't done anything like that, has he? You know, like you're saying, Harry, he hasn't stood out in terms of blundering or anything like that. He's not
throwing the ball in the back of the net.
Mistakes, but by the same token, I think you've had this sort of discussion before. You know, it was in goal against our media, wasn't it? You know,
yeah.
If Boris had been in goal that night and so on. Barkas is, unfortunately, he's a deficit in goal right now. But we're also between a rock and a hard place. Who do you replace him with? Scott Bain? Really?
No, because he has chucked the ball in the back of the net this season. And Hazard has chucked the ball. No, but the point being, Hazard, who I would be prepared to go, let's just go with it and give it a go. Yeah. But the point being, Hazard has has chucked the ball in the back of the net. I mean, not physically, but has Adam Bain have chucked the ball in the back of the net in the way that, although Hazard have made saves that Barkas hasn't made?
See, to be fair though, you need to cut that boy Hazard a bit of slack. He's
really
inexperienced and he's only a young boy.
That's what I'm saying. I would just go, let's just run with the young guy. I mean, that's what I would do. But and then on
to... Because he's actually got potential, Harry, you know. He's made some mistakes, but there's a sort of mistakes that experience will iron out.
That's what I think.
You know. And he's also pulled off some really good saves, hasn't he? You know, and then you come to the Hearts Cup final as well, where he was obviously the hero of the day with his saves, you know. I'd be tempted just to run with Hazard, you know. But when you spend £5 million on somebody, you know, we talk about asset devaluation and all the rest of it, haven't we? If you wanted to sell Barkas, you wouldn't get your money back, would you?
No, nowhere near it.
Jesus Christ. Yeah.
So onto our two goals. First one, so Zelianoussis
It was an absolute clinker. It was
a cracker. Yeah.
I thought Beaton's was really good as well.
Yeah.
With his left foot. I thought they were both two beautiful goals. And I thought to myself, well, again, the ignominy at the start as well was we are losing to an understrength Livingston team that was saving itself for, it was a League Cup semi final this weekend. Yeah. And I was going, Jesus, you know, can I get any worse than this? And then I thought, you know, with those two finishes, I thought, we're turning the screw here. We're actually showing a bit of confidence, a bit of skill. We're showing our level, if you want to put it like that. I thought those two goals were a good example of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second half.
Starts snowing.
Nothing happened in the second half, actually. Nothing happened in the second half apart from Livingston scored a goal.
Yeah.
It was a nothing second half. I mean...
disgracing himself.
Well, I'm going to get on to that in a minute. I tweeted that, to me, it summed up the principle of it just feels like our games are going through the motions just now. Yeah. That Willie Colum and the officials didn't stop play and asked them to... We've all seen this over the years when it's been snowing heavily. They asked the ground staff to come out and sweep the line so you can see where the lines are. And as you said, Saint, they swap over to an orange ball. Now, the only defence I could have on the orange ball thing is... In the COVID rules, they have loads of balls around the edge of the pitch.
Yeah. Okay.
So the only thing I could think of is Livingston don't have 10, 12 orange balls.
But was it just me, or were you struggling to make out the ball, the direction of the ball at times?
I was, and it's a yellow ball.
In the second half, I don't know, if maybe it's my eyesight, maybe any glasses or something, but I was staring at the television and I couldn't follow the path of the ball at times.
I don't know what you think. I thought the stadium looked a bit dark last night as well.
Gloomy.
That didn't help matters either, you know.
It did look gloomy.
Yeah, it like you said, Harry, it almost had the smell of dead rubber last night. Yeah.
Let's just get through this game. Celtic aren't going to win the league and Livingston just want it done and dusted because they've got a cup semi at the weekend. So let's not hold it up any longer and sweep the lines and replace the balls. Just get the game finished. That's what it felt like.
The other thing that annoyed me as well was, in terms of tactics, you know, it became obvious that Celtic were playing the ball in their own half with difficulty because of the conditions, because the ball was holding up in the snow and the players were finding it hard finding their feet. There was always a worry somebody was going to slip in a bad position and give away an opportunity. So if you're going to be pragmatic, that's the game that you push Duffy up front and you say, do you know what, let's cut out the midfield here because the pitch is a shambles. Let's just play direct balls into the penalty area and hope to get one of the second balls and we might get an opportunity. I'm not advocating that as a tactic overall, but I think in reaction to the conditions last night, it would have been understandable.
Against a pretty unsophisticated team like Livingston, that probably would have been tailor-made, Sam. Yeah.
And it really annoys me when you see the clock, and I appreciate the players might not be aware of the time on the pitch, but I mean, the clock last night got to 91, got to 92, got to 93, and we're playing square balls at the edge of our penalty area. Where's the sense of urgency that Celtic teams had through the years, the fighting spirit that you go to the very death, kicking and scratching, trying to get the winning goal? And there's nothing there, there's no passion in the team, we look unfit. We look disorganised. We're in utter shambles.
So the Brown sending off, Saint, what was yours? How did you see that?
I'm disgusted because Brown should be leaving a legacy of being the nine in a row captain through the nine seasons. And it would have been wonderful if he could have led us to the 10. He's led us to the quadruple treble, and he will be remembered as a Celtic legend, but he has never managed to lose that majesty in him that he just sometimes that when the red mist comes down. And I was embarrassed for him last night because that challenge that he made, that I would have understood it if somebody had gave him a sore one and that was his reaction. But there was nothing in that. I don't know what happened there. He just seemed to lose it, and he struck out against the guy, and it was a red card all day long. And if he's not careful, he's going to ruin his legacy as a great Celtic captain and a great Celtic player.
Sean, what did you see?
Not far from that. I think this season, I don't know, to sort of mitigate his loss of his other, you know, his general fitness and so on. I don't know if he's like taken the pitch sometimes and felt I have to be extra cute. I have to be extra less slap than the other against the guy I'm up against or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah.
He comes on, he has to emphasize, I'm Bruni, you know, I'm here, you know, what are you going to do about it? That sort of thing. There was no call for it. There was absolutely no call for it. It was a nothing incident. Yeah. And that's your captain doing that. Oh, come on. You know, I was just so disappointed. Again, certain things sum up our season. I think that summed up our season. Mm-hmm. You know, just falling from grace spectacularly and with no dignity.
The other thing about a Celtic team is, in the past, going down to 10 men may have been a spur. You know, that everybody else would roll their sleeves up and they would get tore in. And it's another indication of how we do miss the supporters, because if Scott Brown gets sent off or Emdy gets sent off, we get down to 10 men. The supporters can be that weak. The phrase I've started using this season is the supporters are a crutch for the team to lean on when they need support, literally need support. And the fans are there, and it's a gloomy night, the weather's rotten, and there's there's no many fighters in that team. There's no many guys you want behind you in a fight. And Brown doing what he did, I just think it's inexcusable because he's there to set an example.
He should know how fragile that team and its mentality is right now. And for him to do that was such a dereliction. It's ridiculous.
The only thing I would say about the 10 man, we went down to 10 men against Livingston last season as well, and didn't, and were shite. When Christie ran around until he got sent, ran around trying to get sent off.
You know what? See the second goal for Livingston. The one time Ryan Christie didn't take the head staggers and just launch himself into a guy. Yeah.
Do you know, I thought their goal was one of those goals.
Completely, as we like to say in Belfast, he lapped out of it. He completely chickened out of it.
He did.
Yeah.
But it was one of those goals where there was not one clear catastrophic error that led to the Livy goal. It was just one of those ones where you just thought, how did they manage to score so easily?
But also, one of the basic tenets of football is stop the crosses.
Yeah.
He didn't. You know?
So prior to the game, the other reason that Celtic were in the news this week prior to the game was Lenny's press conference. So, Sean, what did you make of that?
Harry. the clips that came out initially on Twitter were very bad, weren't they? There's no two ways about that. And then, as you pointed out, Saint, you know, the transcription of the full press conference came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I read through it. And, you know, did he raise some good points? Of course he did. Yeah. But it was such a scattergun approach that any quality in the points that he made were completely lost, because it just turned into a bit of a rant, didn't it?
Mm.
And, you know, I was speaking to somebody who's actually he's a bit of an expert in PR and journalism, what have you. I said, even if Lenny was right or correct, the scattergun approach was so haphazard that any meaningful message was lost. And to accuse, you know, and this was a very crucial point. He started accusing other clubs of not doing things properly.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to do that, you need to provide evidence. You need to have something to back up and enhance your argument. He doesn't have that. So he's lost the argument already in that sense. In terms of PR, what lunatic, what absolute idiot allowed Neil Lennon, who, let's face it, you know, Neil Lennon is not one of, you know, he's not everybody's second favourite player in Scotland or manager in Scotland, is he? What idiot allowed him just to go on and allow him to do this press conference on his own and handle things like that on his own? Somebody should have just turned around and says, no, Neil, you can put out a statement, leave it at that, we move on. Yeah. What's the old saying? Yeah, if you're explaining, you're losing, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
And not only did he continue to explain things, he also contradicted what Lowell said earlier in the week, if I'm not mistaken, you know? So it was a very, very bad thing. And you know, I keep coming back to this. Did he make some good points? Yes, he did. Of course, he did. In terms of the hypocrisy of certain quarters, particularly, you know, the Scottish government's opportunism at times with regards to football. But all of that message was lost because he just kept on firing out against, you know, other targets that he thought were necessary.
Saint, what did you think?
As Sean was saying there, I saw the initial clips and it looked pretty bad. But when I read the transcript, I was actually pleased that he'd come out fighting. But again, Sean makes a good point there that when you go on the attack against so many different targets, then your attack tends to lose its focus because you're concentrating on too many different things rather than the one aspect you should be concentrating on. So, again, and at the risk of repeating Sean again there, I wonder, what is Ian Jameson getting paid for up there? Because our PR for a long, long time now has been terrible. Now, I agree that what should have happened is they should have said, listen, he's under pressure. Don't let him go in front of the cameras. We'll put a statement out. Or what happens then is Neil Lennon goes out and gives one-word answers, short, sharp answers, and doesn't get involved in any big, long explanations or any attacks on anybody. If he has an issue with the facilities at the other grounds, for God's sake, don't mention them by name. He could easily have said, listen, we've been to certain grounds this season and they've not been up to scratch and there's been issues.
Yeah.
And at that point, you've made a good point there. And nobody takes offence at that because nobody's mentioned specifically. But as soon as you start mentioning teams specifically, the Hamiltons and St Johnstons of the world, you're going to upset people. And all it does is you're bringing more pressure on yourself and you're bringing more bad PR in the club. But going back to what I was saying there is our PR department is not fit for purpose.
So, Harry, you know, on a very, you know, flipping point, you're talking about sacking people, you know, in the hypothetical, if I was in charge of Celtic tomorrow, I would not hesitate in sacking the PR department
mm-hmm.
at Celtic, because it's been atrocious.
Somebody Saint and I know made a good point, and they made a comparison, because I had a long conversation with someone the day before Neil Lennon's press conference. And I also had a conversation with a journalist the day before Lennon's press conference. So the day before Lennon's press conference, a journalist had said to me, there's a lot of hypocrisy in Scottish football. Because see some of the things that we are seeing at lesser grounds. If Celtic did them, it'd be front page news. In terms of breaking COVID regulations, right? So somebody had said that to me just the day before, right? Also the day before, somebody had said to me, Celtic were shafted. over the Dubai trip and the criticism, because they phoned the Scottish Government on the morning that they flew out and said to the Scottish Government, are you sure it's okay for us to go on this trip? Because it sounds like all the regulations are changing. And the Scottish Government said, yeah, it's good to go. And within 36 hours of the Scottish Government doing that, the First Minister stood up at a press conference and berated Celtic for being on the trip. Right? And so see Kelly and St Mirren, do you know why Kelly and St Mirren were docked the points and then were okay? And I know this because I know someone at Kelly. They were told that the spacing on a bus was 1.5 metres. For the players, they had to be 1.5 metres apart. Mm-hmm. And they were done because the players weren't 2 metres apart. And so the reason why they got the points turned round is because they were able to provide the evidence of, this is what you told us to do. And so the day before the Lennon press conference, somebody said to me, Celtic have been shafted, because they went, they prepared the manifest, they said, when Julian got the positive test, they went to the authorities and said, based on the manifest, based on these photographs, based on these videos, we believe that Julian and two other coaching staff, I think it was medical staff, need to be isolated because they're all within the 2 metre radius. Mm-hmm. And they initially were told that is correct. And then they came back and said, no, actually, we've decided it should be 4 metres. Right. So that's what somebody told me the day before the Lennon thing. So that's why I then went on and said, actually, Lennon's, I don't have an issue with what Lennon's saying here, because it's what two separate individual parties had told me the day before, right?
Harry, do you think that the timeline in that sequence of events, though, was very critical as well? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I'm not excusing certain things or defending certain things, but when they got their advice, when things changed, and then when they got berated is absolutely critical here, Len, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and so what I was told the night before was basically Celtic took a value judgment that the reason for the Peter Lawwell apology was Celtic were pretty much told, if you make a big fuss about this, football might be at risk of being shut down. Mm-hmm. And Celtic took a value judgment to just take one on the chin for the game, right? Is what I was told the night before, not in defence of Lennon's thing. So when I then went on to online, I think he was wrong the way he did it, and it probably was not the right time. But somebody that's Saint and I know made a good point. Trying to defend Lennon was a bit like if we've lost to Rangers, deserved to lose to Rangers. The team was shite, but the referee was also shite. If you go online and say, the ref had a shocker, everybody says, it wasn't the ref's fault that we lost 3-0 to the Rangers, by the way, it's because of him. I'm not saying we didn't deserve to lose. I'm just making the additional observation that the ref was had a shocker. So yeah. I'm not saying Lennon shouldn't have ranted, right? Or should have. I'm not saying he should have ranted, I should say. And I'm not saying he didn't contradict Lawwell. And I'm not saying it wasn't a car crash incident. And I'm not saying that Celtic haven't handled the whole thing abysmally. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't have gone to Dubai. Saint, you and I were in a WhatsApp group where one of the first things that was said the day that Celtic flew out was, if they come back with one positive test, this is a shit show. So I'm not saying any of that. I am only saying, in all of cutting through all that crap, actually Lennon had a point in some of the things he was saying. Because other third parties have said the same thing to me before Lennon's rant. That's all I was saying. The problem is, as you quite rightly say, Sean, the problem then is when he presents it in that shouty, finger-pointing, air-quoting, everybody else is at fault here, and the reason why Celtic aren't winning the league is because of all you guys, which is the way it came across.
Mm-hmm. See if he had went out and just focused on that issue and did it, you know, just staring down the camera, the optics, the fallout, the narrative, I suspect, would be largely very different. Yeah?
Yeah.
That's one aspect of things. I agree with you. The adjudication, you know, I think some people are justifiably smelling a rat. But like I said, I'd like to see the sequence, the timeline sequence. I'd like to see when decisions were made. I want to see more evidence before I start informing my own judgment there. The other thing as well, as we keep coming back to this, they shouldn't have went, lads. There's no two ways about it. They shouldn't have went. Mm-hmm. If you don't go to Dubai, do you have this problem?
No, and that's the thing. And so
that's the bottom line.
And that's
the bottom line.
And that's why I thought the ref analogy was a good thing.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, I'm not defending the whole
adjudication, you know, is, you know,
I'm not defending the whole Dubai
strange
thing,
shall we say.
But if you go there, the consequence, that doesn't, going there and everything doesn't then mean that what Lennon said didn't have some merit about the situation we find ourselves in. We're getting back to your PR thing, right? So that in defence of the PR team in this, I don't believe that Lennon sat down with the PR team and said, this is what I'm about to say. Because you would have either given him two pieces of advice, the 90% chance you'd have said, don't say anything, don't say that. Or if you're insisting on saying that, this is what you're going to have to say. What you say is, I agree with Peter, there was mistakes made and blah, blah, blah. Having said all of that, the goalposts were changed for us because these are the changes of it. I still don't think you should have said that. But so that makes me think there was no, the PR department had no idea that that's what Lennon was going to say.
Well, that raises more concerns with me, Harry. The infrastructure of the club isn't fit for purpose, Lennon, is it?
No, but then the problem is it then gets back to the crux of whether you have Lennon as a manager, because if you can't trust the manager to hold a press conference.
Yeah. God.
And then the other point is, in defence of the PR department, they're not particularly trying to defend, in defence of them, everybody in Celtic is micromanaged by Peter Lawwell.
Let's keep pulling at those threads, eh? Yeah.
And Peter doesn't understand PR. He doesn't get it.
No, he doesn't.
I've met him.
None of 9 years.
I've met him. He doesn't see the merits of it. He is your stereotypical accountant who's very logical, very focused, thinks in a certain way, and he just doesn't think like someone who PR's just.
Well, Harry, for God's sake, whenever the first, you know, jungle drums were beaten about Lenny getting the sack, what was the first thing he started doing? He started giving briefings to the mainstream media. Yeah. When the more sophisticated, the more effective thing would have been maybe to reach out to, I don't know, bloggers or podcast hosts, you know, that sort of thing. People with an actual connection with the support. Would that make more sense? Well, it makes more sense to me, yeah. But he reached out to the Sun, the Daily Record. I honestly don't know any other Celtic supporters that read those publications. How effective is that going to be?
So, Saint...
nobody answered me there, no?
No, but it is what it is. He doesn't get PR. And that's so you've got the knock-on effect of he micromanages, he doesn't get PR. So, as I say, I'm not here to defend the PR department. I'm just saying that to me is the problem here, that they are micromanaged by a guy who doesn't understand marketing and public relations. I mean, he understands the principle of, if you're going to do season books, you have a sales program around selling season books. He understands that you have to have material that tells people that there's... He understands that principle, but my interaction with him, that's just not the way his brain thinks, brain operates.
Well, to come back to, you know, I actually can't remember when Saints made this point before, but let's face it, the only way that you will get any sort of meaningful seismic change right now, and change does have to happen right now, I agree with you, Sam, money talks. And if supporters in large enough numbers now starting to threaten, we're not going to buy your merch, we're not going to renew our season books, we're certainly not going to renew any marketing or advertising, and enough pressure is made through social media, that's when change will happen. But up until then, you know, unfortunately, I don't see that happening.
Saint, what do you think they're going to do on the manager?
I think... Well, there's what I think and there's what I hope. I think what they'll do is we'll struggle along, because I think if they were going to sack him, they would have done it by now. And I hope that behind the scenes that the wheels are turning in order to get us a manager, a qualified manager, a high-profile manager, a capable manager in place for next season. Because if I was Peter Lobel, my plan would be to unveil a new manager the day after the end of the season, the day after the Scottish Cup final, regardless of who wins it. I would have a new manager paraded at Celtic Park. So I would, and I am content to go on to the part of me thinks that if Lennon goes on to the end of the season, we're not going to win the Scottish Cup, because I just don't see this team, for various reasons, pulling together. I think that they're too disparate, and they're too, there isn't any, you don't get the feeling that there's any team spirit there that's going to pull us through it. So the choice that Lobel's got at the moment is that we pay Lennon off and give it to Kennedy to the end of the season in the same way we did it with Kenny Dalglish 20 years ago? Or do you let Lennon stumble on to the end of the season and give him an opportunity of winning the Scottish Cup? I don't know what they're going to do. But I fervently pray that behind the scenes they are making plans for next season. In terms of getting a new manager in, and not just a new manager, but a whole new coaching staff across the board, because all due respect to John Kennedy and Gavin Strachan and these guys, they don't fill me with any great confidence. I mean, Gavin Strachan, I had very serious concerns about, in as much as his name's Strachan. So that there's nothing in his CV to think he was going to come in here and be a great a great coach. He must have done a great interview with a PowerPoint presentation, because he's never off that laptop. So for that point of view, he probably looked impressive. But I think there's a bit of nepotism creeping in there that with Gordon Strachan. And I'm also told, and I don't know if this is true, but somebody told me that Gordon Strachan's other son, is a scout at Celtic who's paid to do what kind of scouting he does, I don't know. But if that's the case, if an ex-Celtic manager, his two sons are employed by the club and they don't have any great football pedigree, then questions have got to be asked. But what kind of organisation are we running here?
Well, his other son is a scout at Celtic. To be fair to Gavin Strachan, you say about his football pedigree, it's a longer football pedigree than the one that's the scout has. He had a football career from 1997 through to 2011. Played under 21s for Scotland and was assistant manager at Peterborough when we took him in to be on the coaching staff. I'm not saying assistant manager at Peterborough is any gate shakes. I'm just saying he does have a bit of a non-stop football pedigree since 1998 as a player and a coach. But
he's
got a football record, he's not got a pedigree.
Right, well, yes.
I think, yeah, short term, something has to happen. Mm-hmm. At this point, I'd almost take anything. I don't know what John Kennedy has done to necessitate Celtic giving him a career for life, as it appears almost. As you say, Sam, he's part of the coaching staff, and as far as I'm concerned, he's part of this mess.
You know? He's part of the problem. He's not part of the solution.
He's from what I can see, again, he's not a disciple or prodigy of Brendan. Mm. You know, I think, yeah, short term, low. I would be relatively content with him seeing us to the end of the season. But I look at the club, I look at the team, and then I look at the club in general, and I need to start training myself to do this. And I think a lot of Celtic fans need to start training themselves to do this. Stop comparing Celtic to anything in the EPL and start comparing ourselves with other modern progressive clubs who have instituted an identity, a way of doing things, a playing style, a vision. Look at Brentford in the Championship. Look at Atalanta. Look at, God forgive me, the Red Bull clubs in Austria and Germany.
Atalanta and Red Bull Salzburg are two good clubs for us to compare to. They're smaller than us in revenue terms.
Look at the most successful clubs in, you know, comparable countries like Portugal, Belgium, Denmark. I think long term we can concur that, you know, our organisation and leadership structure is not fit for purpose. It's not sustainable. It's now also completely dysfunctional. Looking, you know, as we've just went through our chat about Dubai, there's so many misconnections and nobody reading from the same brief or anything like that. Short term, though, everything is at the whim of our major shareholder, isn't it? Unless he is willing to do anything about this, then, like you say, Saint, we're just going to go miserably till the end of the season. And let's not miss this point as well. We are now in a race for second place.
I wouldn't. Your point, Saint, about appointing a manager at the end of the season, I wouldn't wait that long. I again. Every time we have a bad result, I think this will be the result that he changes it, that they change it. And then within 24 hours, I think, they're going to keep him there because they don't have a replacement. And
put it this way, I wouldn't be surprised if he stayed till the end of the season, would you?
No. After every defeat or drop points, I think this is the time they'll change it. And then I think to myself, no, because they've not got a replacement and their fear is that it gets worse. You know, you clear out, as some people have said, Lennon, Kennedy, Anstruther and go. And Stephen McManus is in charge of the team. He doesn't know what he's doing, doesn't have the skill. I don't mean that in a bad way, I'm just meaning he doesn't have the skill set to do it, and things start to spiral downwards. I think that's what the fear is. Now, I'm not saying that's right or wrong, it's just that's why 36 hours after every time I've thought he's definitely going to go this time, I then try and think, right, okay, why has this not happened? And that's the only thing I keep coming up with. Now, my fear is obviously your point, Sean, about people not spending money. So we need people to spend money. So I would start the comeback tomorrow. The comeback starts tomorrow. And you don't need to say to people, we fucked up. We've made a mess of this season. But you can say it without saying it. Because you can make it clear to people that it's never going to happen again. You put the tanks on the lawn and you make it clear to the Celtic fans that we are blowing them out of the water. And you start that now. And by the time season book renewals come round, Celtic fans think, right, okay, this season's been bad and I'm a bit pissed off, but wow, it doesn't look like it's going to happen. Because I'd have a director of football and he'd be appointed tomorrow. And that director of football would say, I've come in, I've actually been reviewing things for the last couple of months and there's going to be some major changes around Celtic Park and we're going to hold a press conference in 2 days' time when I'm going to start telling you about those. And the first thing, and I would come in, and then he says, right, okay, first thing's doing, I've been looking at the academy, and here's the major changes we are looking at the academy. Here are our array of new coaches that are starting in the academy tomorrow. This guy's from Croatia, this guy's from wherever, this guy's from wherever. He's brought through this player, he's brought through that player, right? And then a couple of days later, you say, right, we are going to have the best sports science teams in British football and European football of teams of our level, and we are buying in the elite. Here's our team of sports scientists, and here's their computer equipment, and here's their blah blah blah. And then you say data analytics, we're going to have the best analytics team, and here's the all. Half of them could already be at the club, but nobody knows about it. So you start the PR thing and say, here's the guys. I know you Main Street media guys aren't into that, so I know some of the bloggers are. So we've set up some Zoom interviews with our fan media to interview the data analytics guys. And here's our array of scouts. We've now got 4 scouts in South America, 3 in the Balkans. Here they are, and they're standing there. And like you're introducing NASA astronauts. That's how you present them. And you have the supporters. And this is bang, bang, bang every week. So that the supporters are thinking, wow, we've transformed everything. We are changing everything. We are spending £5 million in the infrastructure of the training ground for the academy. And you have Rangers sitting the other side of the city saying, shit, this is going to be a one-season wonder because they are blowing us out of the water. That is what you do. And so when the season book renewals come around, the fans think, wow, they've already written off this season. But they're thinking, wow, this is fantastic. And then the coup de grace is when the director of football turns around and says, and this is the new coach for this season, and his salary is £2 million a year with a £2 million bonus for hitting the Champions League, and that's how we've managed to get this fuck-off level of coach. Mm-hmm. That's how you started. That's how you turned it around.
But Harry, again, we have discussed this ad nauseum on this podcast. You have discussed this till, you know, the cows come home. Does the board of directors share that vision?
No.
In no way, shape or form am I confident they even share a modicum of that vision.
They do not agree with the principle of...
They are content just to finish ahead of Rangers. They
do not agree with the principle of somebody who's in charge of the football division. They don't agree with that principle. And for me, on a club of our size...
All these guys with all these fantastic business-oriented, you know, weighted CVs don't want to apply proper, effective governance to their club.
Do you know, I heard a podcast with David Lowe during the week. I think it was the Celtic Soul podcast. And I found it quite enlightening in as much as... David Lowe, coming from a financial background, was discussing Celtic's directors, and he said, obviously, Dermot Desmond, you know, is the linchpin of the club, and as much as, you know, he's the biggest shareholder, but he's also a billionaire, so he's a cornerstone of the club, if you like. But he was discussing the merits of the other directors. And he got to the non-executive directors, and he says, you know, for people like me, for example, who aren't very enlightened in what a non-executive director is supposed to do, he says those non-executive directors, with the exception of one, have all been there for 9 years, so they become too cosy and too familiar. And with it being a football club, and they're probably Celtic fans, they're happy to come along on match day and have a nice wee cushy seat in the stand and get their prawn sandwiches at half time in the boardroom. So it says that has to change as well. So it's not just a change in terms of the management structure with regards.
So we just repeated what we've been saying in this podcast for the last 6 years.
Absolutely, but all I'm saying is that he struck a chord with me. And the other thing as well, he said is, and we've said this ad nauseum, that Peter Lawwell's been there too long, for 18 years. Any chief executive worth of salt has maybe got a 5 or 6 year lifespan.
And Tom Allison has been there for umpty-dumpty years.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Allison, we have a board for... And the other reason you have non-executive directors and you get them in from other businesses is because they're working in other businesses and they're working in other environments and they're giving... As David Lowe would have explained, that they're not executives of the business, so they're not making decisions, but they are giving insight. So when the executives report back to the board then say, are you sure? You know, they then give their insight into the way that these other businesses work and say, look, in my proper day job, or on some of the other boards that I'm working on that are working in the same type of industry, this is how they're dealing with it. And so that helps get you fresh thinking into a company. So the other reason why the issue with our board all being there too long is there's no fresh thinking then comes in. The only one is the, I can't remember her name.
Susan Brown?
Yeah, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
She's been there for 3 years, so she's the freshest face on the board.
Mm-hmm.
But the others, I mean... Ian Bankier has been there far too long. Ian Bankier has been there 11, 12 years. That's far too long. He should be.
I mean, he's the chairman, and he's. I don't like to speak ill of people, but he's never been a convincing personality from the beginning. I think he needs somebody with a wee bit more charisma and a bit more gumption, if I can describe it like that. He's never convinced me in any shape or form.
He's a bit of a wet saint, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah,
I agree,
man, and
I
agree,
suit. My issue is Peter's very fiscally prudent person, right? He's obviously very good at managing finances, and
that's the one way of putting it.
No, but so when Peter became our chief executive, it was just at the period where Rangers were starting to get into the massive debt of 40 50 billion, and our debt I think was 18-19 million.
Mm-hmm.
And we were at a crossroads, and we either continued down the Rangers path, or we drew our horns in and managed our finances better, and we went that route, right? And then the economy of the world crashed in 2008, and money was tight for everybody. You couldn't borrow money for 3 years. So in that environment, there is a strong argument that having someone like Peter is the right guy in charge. Keeps a drain. You know, I've been told tales of how the club was run prior to Peter. Somebody would go in and say, a couple of the laptops are broken in our department, or just get everybody a new laptop. You know, and Peter pulled it in. My issue is, the day Rangers went from the league in 2012 was the day we needed a different type of person in charge, because it was the day our business changed from focusing on finishing a goal ahead of the team across the city.
Yeah.
And that was the day that was the day we should have lifted our gaze to how do we become an internationally successful European club. And the problem is we stayed with the cost cutting, keeping money tight type of management.
Do you remember lads, whenever we beat Barcelona and the exposure of the club, you know, the attention the club was getting, you know, our players were being focused on, we were being spoken of on Five Live, for God's sake, you know. It was down to European success. It was down to European exposure. And unless we start taking that seriously, we're going to remain in this dreadful quagmire. You know, like you're saying, Harry, we've now regressed back to that essential business model now, haven't we? As long as we stay one point ahead of Rangers, we're doing okay. That's not good enough, you know?
See, the thing about selling players, right, and people get their knickers in a twist, but if you look at the clubs that we would like to be, they all sell players, yeah. Right? So selling players, if you're outside the big five leagues, that is how you become a club. You sell a player for 40 million quid. Or for 20 million quid, you reinvest that in 3 5-million-pound players and you use the other £5 million to pay the wages. And then you sell one of those players for 30 million quid and then you reinvest. And gradually you then get to, and they sort of plateau out at selling players for between 40 and 60 million and signing players at 10 million. But it then means that they have 3 or 4 10 million pound players on the park, augmented by lesser valued players, and they perform at that level, and they know that one of those £10 million players will then sell for 60 and they go out and buy another £10 million in his place instead of, you know. And people then say, but you can't do that in Scotland because we're playing the likes of St Johnstone and that's why they get it. But Porto and Benfica, they play against teams with attendances at 3 and 4 and 5,000 as well.
Yeah.
The reason they sell their players for 40, 50, 60 million quid is because the striker scores a goal in the last 16 the Champions League away to Borussia Dortmund.
Mm-hmm.
And
nobody describes them as 10-pot clubs either, Harry.
No. You know? And you get the top dollar for players because you're doing well in Europe. And gets back to my very original point when people at the beginning of this season said, what would you rather, do well in Europe or win 10 in a row? Well, that was a no-brainer. That was a no-brainer. You do well in Europe, because if you do well in Europe, you would win 10 in a row because you'd be so much better.
It's also a complete false equivalence. As a football fan, I am naturally greedy. I want all of it.
Yeah.
I want all the glory. I want all the success, you know? But again, European performance enhances you as a club. Why would you not want that? You know? And again, this is one, you know, unfortunately, I'm coming back to Lenny here. That is one of the biggest feelings I can mark against him, is that this year, of all years, you could get into the Champions League. States, couldn't you? Yeah. And we blew it big time. And we only did that, it was a car crash of a game. You know, I remember watching that Ferns Irish winner. That, you're talking about keeping you up and keeping yourself up at night. That's the sort of stuff like that'll keep you up at night.
The main issue now is we're not even getting to the last qualifier. We're getting put out in the second last qualifier. That we're actually getting worse. We're not getting better.
Well, the season before, the argument against that would be the season before we won the group stage of the Europa League, and two out of three Brit seasons under Brendan, we made Champions League football.
Remember you and Jack Black talking about this in that podcast, is that ultimately there's no vision in the club, is there? There's no strategy. We're even struggling for a viable playing identity. If you talk about Leeds United right now, you do know what type of football they're going to play, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And that hasn't just come from their manager, that's come from the boardroom who had the vision to appoint someone like Bielsa. That's what I'm talking about right now. Even Hibs, to a certain degree, have that identity. You know what type of football they're going to play and how they're going to play it. Yeah? Do we have that? No, we have Lenny Ball. We have chaos. We have, you know?
You know how when you have...
Identity of sorts, I suppose, but...
You know how when you...
not the sort of identity I want.
When you're having a discussion with a not-so-bright person and you start to have an argument or a debate with them, and the point that they're making makes no sense based on the point they were making 5 minutes ago. But there's no rationale to their argument because they just argued a point in the moment because they're not sophisticated enough to have a coherent, logical argument. It's just in the moment and everything. They contradict themselves all the time because they're not thinking of anything through. Our football strategy is in the moment.
Yeah.
We're not coming across as a coherent, sophisticated, educated business because every decision we make is in the moment. We sign too many loan players because it's about the moment of winning the next couple of games. It's about the moment of, as long as we finish above Rangers, there's no coherent strategy, you believe, about... Do we have a plan to become a last 16 team in the Champions League on a regular basis? And then do we have a process for reevaluating when we become a last 16 team as to how we move to become a last 14 or a last 18? Because I know Ajax do.
Yeah.
And I know Anderlecht do. And I know Red Bull Salzburg do. And I know Porto do. And I know Benfica do. And I know Atletico Bilbao do. I know all of these clubs do. Now, and I know Atalanta do. Now, whether they achieve it, it's a different matter, but the fact is they will do it, and then do you know what? See if they're moving towards it and they're not quite achieving it, they'll reassess, right, okay, let's tweak this to see how we get there.
Yeah.
Our business model is to win the league this season. And then next season, our business model is to win the league.
Christ, it makes you sick, doesn't it?
Anyway, we don't have a game. We don't have a game this weekend. So I'll ask you a yes no answer. Saint, will Neil Lennon be picking the team for the next Celtic game?
I think he will be. It doesn't fill me with any glee, because I think for Neil Lennon's welfare, he should be taken out of the firing line, because I think it's, if it goes on like this for much longer, it's going to have a detrimental effect on his health, and that's something that worries me greatly.
To give you some context for anybody listening who's not paying attention, our next game's next Wednesday against Hamilton
at
Celtic Park.
So as I said there, yeah, I think Lennon will still be there. And I was trying to explain there that I'm worried about his health in the long run, because I don't think this is doing him any good, as his press conference showed last week. So I do think if he's not going to be the manager in the summer, so letting him limp along at the end of the season doesn't make much sense to me, but I do think that that's what the board will do.
Sean, will Neil Lennon lead the team out against Hamilton?
Unfortunately, yes. Like Sam said, see at the start of the season, you know, if there's one man I wanted to see us lift a 10, you know, Neil Lennon was certainly up near the top of that list. That's for damn sure, you know. But the way he has systematically went about tarnishing his legacy, particularly with recent decisions or bad decisions, shall we say. But by the same token, I don't think the board have the balls to sack him for whatever reason. They will just let him limp on until things get really, really bad. And I shudder to think how bad it'll be before they have to sack him. Will he be in charge next week? Yes, unfortunately he will. God knows what sort of team we'll put out. That's exciting, isn't it? even a home game against Hamilton, you know, last season, 3 points in the bag, we'll do them. Are you confident?
No. Right,
that,
on that...
That in itself speaks volumes, doesn't it?
On that cheery note, I will say Sean and Saint, thanks very much.
Pleasure, Harry.
Stay safe, boys and girls.
We've already said
as I always say, there'll be more along soon, so I hope you enjoyed that. That was St. Anthony and Sean. Don't forget, no matter how frustrating, irritating, whatever phrase you want to use, whatever adjective you want to use, this is our club, and we'll all be supporting it again next season, and hopefully it will be much better. Anyway, enough of me. All I would say is, don't let your frustrations at the management situation get in the way of supporting the Celtic FC Foundation. The work of Tony Hamilton and his colleagues is absolutely fantastic and phenomenal that they have done, particularly during this pandemic. And if you're lucky enough that you can share a bob or two, go on the Celtic FC Foundation website, see the wonderful work that they are doing, and see if you can steer a penny or two their way. Enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Goodnight.